Hi, it's Phil Brown, and I'm here with David Whelan. And today we're going to start part three of our Jargon 2015 podcast.
Yes, if you've missed them, go back and listen to A through L on the previous two Jargon podcasts. And today we are going to start with M. What do you have for M?
M is for megabyte. So we all talk about a megabyte, but very few people, I think, understand what the unit represents. It's just over a million bytes, the byte being the smallest unit, I suppose, available for memory and storage. To ballpark it, one byte would be equivalent to about one typed character if we're using text. So if you're thinking about how much storage this is going to take up, you can equate it more or less, depending on spacing and things like that, on a one-to-one kind of ratio. So how many pages would that be? Roughly, depending on your font and characters and whether you have any images, a megabyte would be somewhere between 250 and 500 pages of information. What do you have for N, David?
N. I have the letter N. When you buy wireless routers or get on wireless networks, you used to buy wireless routers that had the letter B, and that was the standard at the time. So you'd get Wi-Fi 802.11b. And that was where it began. And that was sort of a slow speed. And then it slowly grew to 802.11a, which seems a little bit backwards. And then a few years ago, we went to 802.11n. And that was the speed that you aimed for, or the hardware that you tried to buy. And so now we're going beyond N, finally. N, which never really stood for anything. I always thought it meant new. But it never really stood for anything. And it was a big leap up from the A's and the B's. And now we're going to AC. So if you're going looking for new wireless hardware, you want to make sure it's going to be compatible with the AC protocol that's coming along, which is promising, you know, hundreds and hundreds of megabits per second throughput, which is great if you are using it in your internal network inside your office.
And hopefully most of the routers and modems and so on are backwards compatible.
Yes, I think from that perspective, you should be fine. The trick, or the thing to remember really with Wi-Fi hardware, is that even if it says you're going to get 800 megabits per second throughput, as soon as it hits your internet connection, which is only 1 megabit per second, you lose 799. So it's great as far as internal use if you want to stream files from your server, or if you want to stream movies from your server, it's great. But you need to just keep that in mind, that although you're getting higher, it is good. It's positive for internal use. It won't necessarily mean that your internet access gets better.
And it also, just the one last point, I think, is if you have a device on your network at home or on your Wi-Fi network that is an 802.11b, even though you have an N router, it's not going to go to that N protocol because it goes to the lowest common denominator on that network.
Right, yes. If you've got 802.11bs or A's out there, you want to make sure that you toggle them so they go to N if they can, or frankly, just update them. Because if you've got that kind of old equipment, you'd get a speed boost if you updated.
Right.
Okay, what's there for O?
O, I've chosen open source. It's software where the programming code is available to anyone. And you will see one of the advantages is that you're not working with proprietary software, so there's no bowing down to one of the big guys, if I can put it that way. And the other thing is there's sort of a lot of crowdsourced improvements to open source software, and you can either make your own improvements, if that's possible, if you have the knowledge, or you can rely on others to tweak things as the software goes, and there's regular updates, and in theory, can improve things quite a bit.
And I've heard, though, the flip side, and the reasons that law firms might not use it is, well, I don't have anybody to call in order to get support, because since it's open source and it's a community, then I have to rely on the goodness of other people.
And that if, I suppose, is one of the major downsides of open source, is in terms of the tech support available, you're really going on Google searches and looking at boards and trying to find out fixes and workarounds that other people have worked out. Or you can throw your problem out there on one of these boards on the internet, and other people might be able to solve the problem for you, as opposed to going through some 30-page FAQ from Microsoft or Apple or someone like that, and then the little proviso at the bottom saying, did this help you with your problem?
I think the interesting thing about open source is how much of it we use without really realizing it. So if we use the Mozilla Firefox browser, for example, we're using open source software. And I think we're going to see a trend, certainly with Microsoft's embracing Android and other environments, Linux, we will see that they will be open sourcing more of their code as well. And so that's the nice sort of sweet spot where you've got an organization supporting it. That's big enough to actually support it, but it's still free to us to use or to play around with.
And I think there'll be quite a bit more talk about open source software, given some of the concerns people have these days with the larger companies potentially giving up encryption keys to various governments.
Right. So we'll have both free beer and free puppies.
That's right. And now the letter P. What do you have for P?
P, I like the word proxy. Proxy is good. Lawyers know what proxies are. And then the terms of technology, a proxy really does the same thing that a proxy does in real life. It stands in the place of you. And a proxy can do some good things for you. It can allow you to route all of your network traffic through the proxy, which will then protect your systems from behind that proxy by filtering out information that may be unique to those web browsers or computers. It'll allow you to control how your traffic flows in and out of your environment. So it's a little bit like a security tool where you can funnel things and control what gets to the web and what doesn't. One of the benefits of using a proxy is that you can set it up so that it blocks out inappropriate sites. Web filtering is an obvious one, and from a parent's perspective, you might do it. But even more importantly, frankly, is not the content so much as the like malware sites and bad sites like that, where you just don't, you want to eliminate the ability of your staff or people in your law firm to even click out and potentially download malware and things like that. A proxy server can allow you to funnel everything through that and make sure that anything that's leaving your law firm or coming back into your law firm is coming from a place you want it to come from.
And the proxy doesn't have to be a physical server. It can be a virtual identity.
Right. Yes. Yeah. You can actually buy a computer and run all of your connections through it, or you can buy a piece of hardware that acts as a proxy, or you can just have this virtual identity. So it sort of runs through it and then runs back.
Right.
All right. What's up for S? I'm sorry, Q. We always forget Q.
Q is a tough one, and the best I could do was query. Queries are the sorts of things you would use to make inquiries of software or your computer to find out things like which of my ports are open, what's my IP address, things like that.
Yeah, and it's amazing, really. It's one of those terms of art that I think lawyers would probably understand. It really is just asking. You're just asking things. And so in Excel, you may be using the Excel query language in order to ask what is in different cells and how to manipulate those. And of course, when you use a web search engine like Google, you're obviously doing a query there. So it's interesting, really, how many query languages we're surrounded by.
And that's part three of our Jargon podcast. Stay tuned for part four.
Sounds good.